Hello, welcome again to the Mixed Faith Marriage Mastermind. I believe that's what we call it. I sometimes call it the panel discussion. This is where three mixed faith marriage experts get together and talk about all things relating to a mixed faith marriage. We have myself, Brooke Booth. I'll just tell you a little bit about each of us. I am the PM, if you use that nomenclature. I'm post-Mormon. I do not attend. We have Suzette Halterman. She attends occasionally. She supports her husband, who is believing. We have Chris Rich, who is our go every week one, and she is believing. Chris, I think you're also in like the Relief Society, Stake Relief Society presidency.
I am.
So
Yep, I'm a
she
church lady.
is the church lady. We are here to talk about mixed faith marriages, and today our topic is sex and sexuality. Now, I know this isn't always an easy topic. I know that there's a lot of squirming and wiggling that may happen, but this is something that I think is obviously integral in a relationship and something a lot of my clients talk about. And they'll come to me and they'll be like, "Can we talk about sex?" And the answer is yes, because I think it's an important topic, but it is something that people are sometimes uncomfortable around, and we acknowledge that, and we have our own discomforts because we are also humans, and we are here as humans and coaches. So before we get started, I wanted to talk about definitions, because in our LDS culture, sometimes we use like euphemisms for certain things, and we can do that here, but I also want to just be really clear what we're talking about. So, for instance, intimacy is a term that's often used for sex. And I think for purposes of this conversation, let's use intimacy as what it is. It's emotional connection or depth in a relationship. For sex, that's as the sexual activity, physical intimacy. Now, this can mean all sorts of things. Sometimes it's just penis and vagina, but it can mean a lot of other things. And so we're going to use sex for the actual physical intimacy. And then sexuality is another term we'll be using. Sexuality is very broadly defined as just your sexual feelings. And that's very diverse and very personal. So, just with that little bit of an introduction on the language and the definitions we're going to be using, we're going to go through our normal cadence where we're going to present some questions and have some discussion around them. And we usually start by sharing our own personal experience. So, buckle up. We're going to hear a little about us and our experience. How I want to frame it is when somebody has a faith transition, there can be a shift in beliefs and new ways of approaching topics such as sex and sexuality. I've also seen it where a faith transition or a mixed faith marriage just shakes things up enough in a relationship that things like sex or sexuality that were like ignored or endured or just not really a significant issue somehow rise to the top and become more of an issue. So different relationships have different dynamics. Sometimes it's an issue that's been not great, and a faith transition just highlights that and makes it something that needs to be addressed. Sometimes it just changes. So I want you to know that every situation, every relationship can be a little bit different. But like I said, we like to get a little personal. So we're going to start by discussing how our relationship's been impacted by the changes in our faith transition and in our mixed faith marriage. Have we changed our approach to sex and sexuality, things we've seen with our partner? And share as little or as much, because I realize this is personal and private, but also like we're people to hear to, share our experience and offer some perspective.
Yeah, I just want to, before we jump into our personal things, I just want to kind of add some caveats that we are not sex therapists. And so, like, I am not coming at this. I don't think any of us are coming at this from, we are experts on this. But I do think that kind of the intersection of mixed faith relationships and sex is something that's just not talked about, because I think it, there's some unique elements to it in the broader picture of couples and sexuality. So again, so we're not experts, but just bringing some, like you said, personal experience and just what we've seen with couples in how this intersection between kind of mixed faith and particularly LDS, like not just two people with different faiths who maybe have different views about you know, morality around sex and how to raise their kids. Like, that's one thing. But I feel like the LDS mixed faith scenario where one person deconstructs their faith, I feel like there are some really unique elements to how that impacts sexuality. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And that being said, should I jump into my person?
Jump in.
So I'll just tell you, like, when Brooke initially, you know, kind of sent questions for us to think about in preparation, I was like, oh yeah, like, it didn't really, my deconstruction didn't really impact our relationship, that our sexual, my sexual relationship with my husband that much, except for, you know, in positive ways. And then, like, an hour before we met to record this, all the memories came flooding back of, like, the whole year that I spent trying to reconstruct and understand my own sexual story, and all the ways that church and religion was so intertwined with it. I did spend like at least a solid year, thousands of hours listening to sex therapy podcasts, reading all the books, trying to understand what is healthy sexuality supposed to be? What is healthy sexuality outside of religious context? Because I was like, how on earth would I even talk to my kids about it because I don't even know how to do this, because I was only raised this one way, and really confronting kind of the parts of my own sexual development that were problematic as far as leaders who very much mishandled situations and a patriarchal system, and all the things that really impacted me and created so much shame, and, you know, so many things happened over my own kind of sexual story. And I had to make sense of that all and try to understand it and that took a huge amount of time. And it's funny how I forgot about that until like an hour before this. And I was like, oh yeah, like, that was huge for me. The result of that, listening to thousands of hours of audiobooks and sex therapists and experts and reading all this stuff, I then was very empowered because I knew my story. I knew all the things that had impacted my own sexual development. I knew my sexual story. I had a better grasp of what are my sexual values outside of religion. And the result of that was I felt empowered. And anytime you're empowered, you know, that kind of, that's like a life energy, and that helped, you know, that was a benefit to my own sex life with my husband, because I was very clear on myself. And, you know, that manifested in being in a much healthier, really good sexual relationship. So, that's one part of it. My own journey of just deconstructing my whole sexual story and restructuring it and understanding it. And then I would say with my faith deconstruction came very much like an enlivening for me in all areas, just because it was expansive for me to really deconstruct all my beliefs and figure out who I am. And I just felt so much more alive, and sex is so tied into your life energy. So for me, that it impacted my sexual relationship in a positive way, just because I just very much felt expansive and energized. Some of that was due to my deconstruction. It was also a time in my life when I knew I was done having kids and my kids were growing up, and I like had a chance to like think about myself. So all these factors were happening, but it ended up being good for me and for my sexual relationship with my husband, in the long run. But it was messiness kind of within myself to get there, for sure. So that's my story.
So for me, it was looking, you know, it's interesting because we've been doing this for like 20 years. And so like thinking that was a long time ago and figuring this out, it's definitely been a journey that has evolved, that's taken twists and turns. And there were some things that went really well and some things that didn't go so well. And I was just thinking back to those like initial times, and I'm thinking of my friends that are brand new to this space. There was definitely once again, I'm the active believing member, and my husband, religion is not his thing. And when he told me that he was leaving the church, that he was done with it, it literally felt like a rug had just been ripped out from under my feet. And so the safety net that, you know, there were things that we never, I mean, we had talked about it, but things that I never thought we needed to talk about, all of a sudden I was thinking about, well, okay, well, what about this? What about this? This is something that we've never talked about. So all of a sudden I had all of these what ifs in my mind. And I see that a lot with my clients too, because it's, you know, you think you're on the same page, and then it's like, are we? And how do we even talk about these things? So I think for me, it was definitely a time of, okay, if he left the church, is he going to leave me? And so I think there's like this insecurity that shows up in all levels of your relationship. And I think that that sexual aspect of the relationship definitely shows up in there. And I know I've mentioned this before, but I totally felt like this was happening to me. This wasn't something I had chosen. So I very much felt like a victim. And this isn't rocket science, but it's really hard to want to have a sexual relationship with a villain. And so I had to do a lot of work on that. And that was something that definitely took time. And just the way that we are, our thoughts create our emotions. And so, you know, things like desire and attraction and all those different things are definitely affected by our thoughts. So that was an interesting thing to work through. Also, just the, there's so much, it's so easy when, like I mentioned, I felt like that safety net was gone. And so I did a lot of catastrophizing, things that have never come up ever, I worried about then. So just, there's so much fear, worry, overwhelm. And that when we are operating out of fear and worry, it's really not great fuel to take any kind of action from, but it doesn't help in your sexual relationship at all. So that was kind of like my initial, those were some of the hard things for me personally. And now I look back, and as I mentioned, that's lots of twists and turns, but now I know a lot more about me, and I've had to figure out, and Suzette, I like how you're talking about your sexual story. I don't think I've ever heard that term before, but I like that, figuring out me and then being able to, for both of us to come together and to grow and to learn to communicate better and to create more intimacy and more I can't say the word, vulnerability. I think that, yeah, so I look back and I feel like we've made a lot of progress.
I'll tell my story a little bit here. So Suzette, you've said so many interesting things here, but I definitely am the product of my culture and my upbringing. And I was raised LDS. So I was raised with a certain idea around purity culture and law chastity and all of this. And I was like, I took it to heart. I was like, yes, this is important. This is how I want to make my decisions. And I did. So when I got married, you know, we're supposed to go from like 0 to 60, like overnight. You know, I used to tell my husband, like, you just can't flip a switch like that. And that was challenging. I think this is something that like Jennifer Finlayson 5 talks a lot about in her body of work. Like, this isn't a brand new concept I'm bringing up, but it made it challenging for like decade of our relationship. Like, it made sex challenging. And once, I had a very similar story to you, Suzette. Once I started to have a faith transition, I gave myself permission to look at other beliefs around sex, beliefs around my sexuality, beliefs around just being a sexual creature, like a human who has, you know, sexuality as part of themselves. Like, it was able to start to look at these things fundamentally different than I'd ever have before. And it took time. Like, I was very similar to him, like reading books and listening to podcasts and like learning, because I'd never given myself permission to explore that, to ask that, to be curious about that, because it was just part of my, how I interpreted my own socialization was like, don't look there. Don't spend time thinking about that. You don't need to spend time exploring or unpacking that. So I didn't, till I was well into my adulthood, well into my marriage. And I was able to unpack that and just be honest with myself and explore questions that I'd never even considered exploring. It helped me to look at things that cause me stress and anxiety very differently around sex and sexuality. It helped our relationship between my husband and I tremendously, because some things that we had just been working on and working on and working on without any real success, we were able to make some more progress and movement because I was able to look at sex and sexuality fundamentally different than I ever have before. And I don't want to say that it was all my fault and I was carrying all of the baggage here, because that's certainly not the case, but it made a significant difference. And at the same time, I'll add this, that I think my husband, he expressed a lot of concerns about, if you leave the church, does that mean you're also leaving the marriage? If you leave the church, does this mean you're also questioning the institution of marriage or the importance of marriage? A lot of those questions came up too. And they were things that needed to be discussed regularly, very, very regularly. And I'm not going to say it's done and dusted, but it was a really important part of my life, of me taking ownership of my own sexuality and my own experience with sex.
All right, before we move on, can I add one more thing? Because I think there is a gender component to this. So Brooke and I are both the ones that deconstructed, as opposed to our husbands deconstructing. So I think there's a difference, Chris, with your experience as one whose husband deconstructed, because, the work of Emily Nagoski about women have brakes and accelerators, our sexual system is run by brakes and accelerators more so, than the way men's sexuality is. And I think for women, there is more, there's a lot more things that can put on the brakes, not feeling emotionally connected, anxiety, fear. So I think if the husband deconstructs, I think how I've seen it with couples, it impacts the sex differently, because the woman, there's just a lot more going on internally for them that's putting on the brakes. Whereas if the woman deconstructs, I don't know, men don't have quite the, not always, some do, but the need for the emotional connection and for not to have as much anxiety around the relationship to be able to engage in sex. So I just think there is some of that, just to bring it out in the open. Again, I'm not an expert, but just I think it is different depending on who deconstructs, how it impacts the relationship.
I think it's different on all sorts of topics, especially mm-hmm. this. I really do. I think there's a gendered approach to deconstruction and how that impacts a mixed faith marriage. I really do.
Totally.
All right, let's talk about this next. This next idea. I have definitely heard from clients that they're super frustrated around the messaging they've received, and they feel like they haven't been able to fully explore their sexuality or sex. Some people get really curious. They start to want to explore sex in different ways. They want to explore their sexuality in different ways. Some people explore am I homosexual? Am I bi? Am I pansexual? Am I heterosexual? And they start to explore these things that, for whatever reason or another, they never really looked at. And this can add a really interesting dynamic and sometimes a very challenging dynamic to a marriage. I've certainly had clients where this has come up and it's been agonizing, frankly, for them. So what are your thoughts? What are your experience on when you see a couple dealing with these types of issues?
Well, I'll just say, from what I know about how the brain works, things and everything's kind of associated with other things. So I imagine our brains like one thing, like religion, and then it has all these carabiners that are hooked to all these other things, like sexuality. And if you deconstruct, it's like it pulls along with your faith deconstruction. It also yanks all those other things that it's hooked onto with carabiners down, and you kind of have to deconstruct those too, because they're all connected. And so sexuality is so often linked with religion, just the nature of it. So often people just that gets yanked down as part of the the deconstruction process of, I have to rethink this and examine everything. And how did this impact me? And then I have to reconstruct it again. And that process is hell. I'll just be honest. Like, deconstruction is hell. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. It's because it's so lonely. It is lonely to do that. It is so lonely and hard. So I feel like in a marriage, you just have to know that. If you're the one going through that, to be like, this is a process that might take a couple years as I'm deconstructing all these things that fell down with my faith deconstruction, and then to rebuild it again. And in that process, I might experience a lot of anger towards the church for the ways that it impacted my sexual development, and regrets, and wishing I could have explored in different ways. And that's just part of the messy hell of it all that you got to go through. And if you're the spouse witnessing that, you just got to know, like, this is going to take a while to sort through. Sexuality is complex, and it might be a rough patch in your marriage while, you know, the person who deconstructed is trying to sort all this out. But, you know, encourage them to get some help, give them some just space and compassion to work this out. And in the process, the spouse probably has to work out their own stuff about how this is impacting them. So that's my first thing, is this is a nasty, hard process because it's complex. And so just patience and grace for all of it.
That I want to like reach to the screen and give you a big old hug. That I just want to validate how hard that sounds. And I don't know that I've ever even thought about that before. So I appreciate you sharing that. So there definitely is this mixed faith component here. And I think all of the things that we're talking about show up in any sexual relationship as well, that it's not just a mixed faith thing. This is people figuring out who they are and what they believe. And I think it's going, and I love that analogy of the carabiners being linked and affecting each other. I think it's really important that we stop and look at, what are my beliefs? What are my beliefs around sex? What are my beliefs around sexuality? All these different things. And then identifying those beliefs, and then wondering, looking and trying to determine, where did these come from? Why do I believe this? And looking specifically, where did these beliefs come from? And we've definitely received messages from the church. Our parents taught us different things. Society, we've learned things from society, from media, the books we've read, the movies we've watched. And I think it's interesting to go and like literally list those things out. What are my beliefs? Why do I believe that? And looking, what, like Suzette was saying, just with a whole bunch of compassion, like, of course, this is what I believe because this is what I learned here or what my parents taught me. And some of that messaging it's explicit things that we've actually heard. And then there's a lot of implicit messaging as well. And really looking at that and then determining, okay, so these are my beliefs. Is this how I want to keep believing? Is this how I want to, I think of one of my favorite questions is, does this serve me? When I'm believing this, do I show up as the person I want to be? Do I show up in my sexual relationship as the partner that I want to be? And I think it's really important that we, for anyone, whether you're in a mixed faith relationship or not, but to look at those beliefs. And this could be done on any topic, not just sex, but I think sex is a really important thing. And then determining, do I still believe, is this what I want to believe? Is this going to help me create the kind of relationship that I want?
I'll add to that. I think what Chris is saying here is so important. And it takes so much honesty to really like dig into that and be honest with yourself. The other piece I see too is, like, I've worked with clients and they're questioning, like, am I gay? Am I straight? Like, who am I attracted to? What does it mean to feel attracted? And as they're just exploring that on their own right, which I think is a totally appropriate thing to explore, it can be really scary to their partner. their partner can feel personally rejected by even just the fact that their spouse is asking questions like this, let alone whatever answers they may be discovering or finding for themselves. And that can be an interesting and challenging dynamic to work through when your spouse's journey becomes like, it almost feels like a personal attack or a personal criticism. There's a lot of work to be done there around, and then sometimes what you'll do is you'll gently or not so gently discourage your spouse from asking their own questions and doing their own, like, finding about themselves and understanding what their preferences are, really just doing what Chris just explained. Then that can have an impact in the marriage. Like, I don't have permission to do this. And it's not like my spouse is very, very uncomfortable when I do this. And so it can add another layer of complication. And I think that's part of, like, the individual work you do around figuring out what your values are and how you want sex and sexuality to look in your life is like one huge thing. And then you can add on top of that, lucky us, like, what does your spouse making that mean? What messages are you getting in return? What are you making that mean? And like, how's the interpersonal play happening between that? So when our spouse feels rejected and they express that, or they're trying to discourage us consciously or not from pursuing our own path and exploring our own values, that can be really hard. It can be really hard to give yourself permission to go on the journey you need to go on without your spouse's full permission. And I think that's one reason why it feels so lonely. Because on some level, we know really finding out what our preferences are, what our values are, and being in integrity around those things, it is lonely. Like, our spouse isn't going to necessarily 100% agree with us or feel comfortable 100% of the time. And I think challenging, but also like an important part of differentiation, an important part of taking responsibility for your own experience. And you can do that in a partnership. Like, you can do that. And I think even it can be really good for a partnership to do that, because then you have so much more like data and knowledge about yourself to share with the other person and to then build intimacy on as you share that. All right, let's talk about this one. I have definitely seen this one with lots and lots of clients. There is so much shame that surrounds masturbation and pornography. I know this can be hard on whatever spouse. How have you seen this? What do you recommend when there's pornography and masturbation?
And Brooke, I wasn't sure with that question. Are you like, because I think there's different ways we can talk about it. Are you talking about like teaching your kids about those things? Or is this just about if those things are part of the relationship or not? Like there's so much involved. So what, there's lots of different things that came to my mind. I don't know where you want to go with it.
We can go in whatever directions we want, because I think probably they're all like, I'll go first. I'll lead, but really, I want you to know that like, I don't have an agenda here. I'm just like, oh, this is when I talk to with my clients a lot around. And I know this is something that I've talked to clients a lot that they struggle with. I'll sort of tell you how I see this, and then we can go in whatever direction, because I think how you approach it as parents and how you approach it as a spouse might be quite different. Mm-hmm. I've talked to a lot of people who have a lot of shame around this, and this is where like value differences can come into play. Some people, and I'm not saying right or wrong, this is an individual choice, and I totally respect that people get to make an individual choice, but some people do find this type of behavior like morally reprehensible or even harmful. And other people see it as normal or natural or whatever. Like there is a different belief systems around this. And I think like that's the first thing I would highlight, is that like, just like what Chris was saying, you get to do your own value analysis. You get to like apply what is right for you and decide this. And I think that alone can be challenging for a lot of people. And then what do you do if you come to different conclusions? Another thing to work through. How I like to look at it, and again, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, and only run with this if it aligns with your value system, is I like to look at these things not so much as moral issues, but as emotional issues. And what I mean by that is like, why Why are we engaging in this behavior? Not to say this behavior is wrong and bad, but why? Why are we engaging in this behavior? A lot of times people who engage in this behavior, it's way that they're dealing with emotions. Like just like when people would overshop or overexercise or overspend or overwork or drink alcohol or whatever. Again, not moral issues, but just like this is a way of dealing with emotions that aren't necessarily being processed or dealt with in another way. And so whenever I see issues like this with clients, I like to, as much as like if it works for their value system, take it out of the moral category, if you will, and look at it from an emotional viewpoint and see if we can understand what's going on there. Because when it gets so wrapped up in the morality of it, it can be hard to process and understand what's going on. So I like to look at it from an emotional perspective. I'm not so interested in like the morality of it, more than I am interested in why are you doing this? And, you know, is it having a net negative impact in your life and in your marriage? Similar questions that we've already posed here, like where did you learn this is good or bad? We know how. Is that a belief system you want to carry forward? You know, how are you dealing with your emotions? Is this like a coping mechanism you've used? Like, let's not shame yourself for having emotions and having a coping mechanism. If you don't like the coping mechanism, can we find a different way to cope with this? If you are okay with it, like, do we need to unpack some of the socializations and the shame around that? Like, that's how I like to look at this. And that's just looking at it from the point of the person who's like, engaging in this behavior. It can be kind of a different exercise if I'm talking to the spouse and they're working through their frustration of their spouse using it. But just for time, and I really want to hear what you two have to say. Like, those are some ideas and approaches I tend to take when these topics come up.
Yeah, I love that. I'll kind of say two different things. So I think it is about difference of values around what is okay, what is appropriate within the relationship or to teach kids. This can be a value difference that can come with deconstruction. So anytime you're dealing with a value difference, it, you know, this exposes how you communicate. How well can you listen and try to understand each other and have empathy for the other person's perspective and work together to collaborate and find, you know, something that works in your relationship. So if you don't have those skills and you have value differences around pornography, masturbation, that's going to be a mess. Faith crises, it's like a stressor on the relationship that will show you where all the cracks are and different areas will start to crumble. So if you do not have the skills to communicate around your differences effectively without it getting super messy, yeah, that's going to be a problem. So I think it really boils down to communication, being able to, and you might have to get help, professional help to be able to communicate about some of these things. As far as value difference for parenting, I like what you're saying, Brooke, about taking the morality out of it. You can still have a lot of values around sexuality without them being tied to morality and right and wrong in God's eyes kind of thing. So I have a lot of sexual principles and values. I like, what is it called? The six principles of sexual health from the Harvey Institute, like consent, pleasure, honesty, non-exploitative, shared values. So, you know, I have a lot, even if my husband and I have different kind of views about what is healthy for kids, we do still share a lot of values around, like, you know, like, while I might not have like a moral feeling about pornography being morally right or wrong, I do have feelings about, you know, it doesn't show consent. It doesn't teach kids what healthy relationships look like and how to talk about sex and what works for people. Like, that is missing. And so I don't think it's not healthy for kids for that reason, because I value consent and communication around sexuality. So my husband and I might have very different values, but we also have a lot of shared values about, you know, it being like healthy in this way or not healthy in this way, that aren't related to morality. So, and this, again, this comes down to, you got to learn about sexuality and deconstruct, like you were saying, Chris, like, where did I learn this? And what else can I learn because there's a lot of information about how to deal with sexual differences in a marriage that have nothing to do with morality. There's so much out there. There's so much to help you navigate this. It's just that I think in LDS culture, we just don't know a lot of those resources. And so we're kind of just get stuck in the right and wrong instead of like, there's so many other ways to look at this and figure it out as a couple.
I think you guys had some really great points. It is interesting as a believing member to look at the narrative that we hear around pornography and why it, you know, because we have learned a lot of things about it being the moral thing, that it ruins families. You can become addicted. There was some talk I remember hearing that I don't remember where this was from, but like, if you look at pornography, all the serial killers, they were looking at that. And it, as just thinking about those things, it can really, that's really scary thinking that, you know, like, so if your spouse comes to you and says, hey, or you found it or whatever, there is a lot of fear comes up because of the messaging that we have heard through all the implicit and the explicit messages that I was talking about. So I think it is really important that we do try to neutralize it, because we really want to, it's easy to go in and think this is good and bad, just like you guys have been saying, but recognizing when I'm thinking this is bad and scary, it creates fear in me. And when I am scared and feeling that fear, I want to check in with what my behavior looks like as the believing spouse, that if I'm fueled with fear, a lot of the things that what I see with my clients is that they become controlling, or they get manipulative, suspicious, judgmental. Then a lot of times people think like, oh, it's my fault. And so then they start feeling like, you know, we need to have more sex so they don't look at porn, or if I lose weight, then they won't want to. So it's so interesting to see all these behaviors that we can be a part of when we're fueled with fear. And going back to Brooke's point that pornography is, most of the time, it is about someone not knowing how to handle their emotions. So I think it's interesting to just check in with what that fear is creating for you. And fear usually it's usually not great fuel to take action from. Also, I think another thing to consider is the way that we talk about it. I've had so many clients say, you know what, well, this is the, you know, if they were to look at porn, they've told their spouse, if you look at porn, it's over. That's a deal breaker. And I think that can be scary, because chances are this is the problem that, or a lot of people have looked at it before. And so when we say those blanket statements like that, it's going to make it a lot harder for our spouse to come forward and say, I've been looking at this, because so you have the fear on the side of the one spouse, but then the other spouse gets scared to share. And I think too, to check in with our reactions when, you know, when they do talk to you about this and say, yeah, this is going on, do you freak out? Do you make it so they want to come and tell you? Are you open and curious, or do you panic and freak out? So I see that a lot with clients. So just thinking about, when I'm feeling this fear, how do I show up? And it usually doesn't go well. So we need to allow those emotions. When you are feeling the fear, allow it, let it be there, let it go through you. And then when you're ready to have a conversation, when you're not so fueled with fear, it's going to go so much better.
These are good. These are good comments that you guys are sharing. Okay, let's go on to the next idea. And this actually, I think, ties in, Suzette, to what you're saying, those six principles of a healthy sexual life, or whatever the exact titles. I've heard those before and I really like them. So this is the question. I've seen a fair amount of entitlement around sex as I worked with clients, like feeling that like once you're married, you get sex regardless. Like it's almost like now consent is gone. What might you say in a situation like this? If you have a couple and there's entitlement around sex and access to the other person's body or access to sex?
Again, I think faith deconstruction reveals a lot. It reveals, that's what I call grandiosity. Like I'm entitled to things. I deserve things instead of being equals. A lot of things. Marriage will reveal a lot of things. Faith deconstruction will reveal a lot of things. Being in a mixed faith marriage, it just shines a light on a lot of things. And one of those is, are you equals or not? Is there entitlement or not? So I just think there's a lot that comes out in the wash in all of this that needs to be addressed, probably with some professional help. It's too much to talk about in an hour, but I'll just say that, like, get some help to navigate these things that come out in the wash in a mixed faith marriage.
I think it's also important that if you feel, like if you're feeling resentment, I like to think when we're feeling resentment, a lot of times it's because we don't have our own back. And this could also, I think a lot of times we think of this doesn't have to be that it's the husband or the wife. This could look either way. And I think it's important to recognize that, but noticing, I like to say when we're feeling resentment to check in, where do I not have my own back? Are you sharing? Are you saying, no, thank you, I'm not interested. Do you have boundaries? I think we need to check in with that. Are we speaking up and sharing what is really true for us?
So I want to add to that, because I think sometimes what happens is when you are honest and you say the no or the no thank you, sometimes there's a consequence to that, like a punishment, if you will. Sometimes they're pouting or distant, or there's a withdrawal of affection or attention. And that's an interesting dynamic too. So if you do say no, you get that. And so you are sort of trained or teach yourself to not say no. There's a price that you end up paying. And it can be a subtle price, like a pout or a slow response, but it's a price nonetheless, and it can affect honesty and it can affect openness and transparency. So I think here there's the skill of learning to be able to manage your own emotions if you get a no, being able to manage your emotions if your spouse has emotions, like they're pouting or withdrawing attention. I think this is again where you're like having your back is what Chris says. And I would say it in a similar way of like taking care of yourself, acknowledging your emotions and being able to manage those even when the situation may not be ideal. And if there is, as I call them, the pouts, that's sort of my language. There is the pouts or the subtle punishment. That's one of those things that sometimes can come to the surface in this mixed faith marriage. Like I call it, like Suzette was talking about, I call it like, this is when like it's shaken and all the sediment rises to the top. It was all at the bottom. It looked like it was clear water, but it was all there the whole time. And it sort of shakes it up and it brings it to the surface. I think this is one of the things like, then now that we know, now that we see it, let's talk. Like in talking about these types of things and these subtle forms of punishments, it's hard. It's hard work. But if we don't ever talk about it, it's never going to be resolved, which I do not pretend that this is ever simple. Okay. Okay, one more question, and then I have two, and then we'll do some last comments. So one is, what about a difference in sexual desire? This is something you hear about quite a bit. One desires more sex or a certain type of sex and the other doesn't. Any ideas or suggestions for this?
Just that this is so normal. You are two different human beings and sexuality is complex and it's so tied in to so many things. So it's going to happen. And for some couples, it's more prevalent than others. Again, as the Gottmans say, you're going to have your own set of perpetual problems, like things in your relationship that you're never going to be on the same page about. That's a given. for some people, sexual discrepancies, desire discrepancies is part of that. It'll never be the same. Like that is one of their perpetual problems. So with anything like that, it's about how do we manage it? How do we keep dialoguing about it and not get stuck? How do we keep it moving? And all of that takes skill. I mean, relationships take so much skill that we're not taught, that are not modeled for us. These skills are not modeled. How to communicate about these really vulnerable things. So sex is so vulnerable because it's connected to our feelings of worth and whether we're, you know, doing okay in the relationship and am I being a good spouse? There's so much tied into sex. So when it's vulnerable, it's harder to talk about. We tend to avoid those things. We tend to get really defensive. And so just, if you're having desire discrepancies, that's normal. All couples have differences of some kind. If that's your difference, and it may fluctuate throughout your relationship, but it's just one of those things you're going to have to learn to talk about and learn to manage. And you might need a third party to help with that if you don't have the skills. And again, and most people don't. So to talk about these really vulnerable, hard things, it's hard.
And I think I don't have much more to add to that other than what Suzette was saying, that it is so normal and it's easy to think we should be on the same page. We should have the same desire level. And when we're thinking about it, that's what makes it a problem. If you were to look at if you looked at a whole bunch of different relationships, you're going to see that discrepancy. So just recognizing, you know, this is asking the question, why is this a problem? Why is it a problem that one has more desire and the other one doesn't? That's so often we make it more of a problem by the way that we think about it. So that's very normal.
This is great. Cause what I was thinking is like totally in alignment with what you're saying. I'm like, to have a higher or lower sexual desire, not a problem. Like one's not better or worse.
Welcome to the club.
Right, that needs to be fixed. Like, it's just part of being human. Are you shaming yourself for this? Are you shaming your spouse? Like, do you try to fix them for, like, these are, I think, the questions we look at, because having sexual preferences, having sexual fantasies, having different desires, like, normal, 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 right? Part of being human, part of being human, part of being human. And so watch the judging, the fixing, the condemning, the convincing, and lean more into the communication, the clarity, the understanding. Okay. Yeah. So let's wrap up with this. Have you seen any other issues or areas around sexuality with your clients that you want to talk about? I think this might be a time where I want to make a comment about like kids and talking to kids about sexuality. I have thoughts about that. I didn't throw that in the notes, so surprise to you too. But any things that we haven't talked about that you think are worth highlighting and you want to talk about now?
I think it's interesting that we talked about this a little bit with the pornography, but the shame piece. Shame is an emotion that feels terrible. And so when we're feeling it, we want to hide. And I think it's so, so, so important to have this is a great resource. Sarah Brewer is also a life coach, and she works with people that are trying to get rid of unwanted porn use. And I love how she talks about a sex positive, shame-free approach. And I love that. And I think that is so important that we have that in our marriages and also when we're teaching our kids. Because let's be honest, we as, and here's the church lady, as children of God, we are created to be sexual beings. That is a part of who we are. It's a beautiful part. And I think it's so important to let our kids know, if you're feeling these sexual urges, you are normal. Congratulations, your body works. And then to teach them, you know, like we can teach them how we want to teach them around that. But this idea that I think so often there's this idea that, oh, I have a sexual thought and something's wrong with me. I shouldn't be thinking this, but to recognize, no, this is your body's working. This is how it's supposed to work. And there are definitely, you can have the boundaries. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, but just letting them know that sex is an amazing, beautiful, wonderful thing. And that when we're, shame is never helpful. Shame around, it just, it likes to hide. And then when we're feeling shame, we do not show up as the people that we want to be. So I think that just sex positive, shame free approach is important.
Are we talking about parenting or just our closing thoughts?
Both, with either or. Like, right. This is.
I'll just say my final thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts about parenting. Let me just say, there's so many resources out there that are fantastic for kind of a values based approach to sex and teaching kids that don't have anything to do with, you know, religion, that I think both people could get behind. There's a lot out there. Do some research, reach out to me. I'll give you a list. But as far as my closing thoughts, I think when I'm sitting with couples, because I work about half and half mixed faith couples, half and half just couples struggling with whatever, 9 out of 10 couples will bring up sexual struggles. Even if that's not why they started to see me, once they feel safe enough to talk about it, then it usually comes up. And 9 out of 10 mixed faith couples end up talking about sexual struggles also. This is just, sex is complex. It is so tied to so many things. So I just want to normalize it. Like if sex is a struggle because of your mixed faith marriage or other marriage issues, like don't be afraid to talk about it with somebody and get help. Just know that, like, that's what, you know, if somebody works with couples, they, you know, or people in relationship, they are so used to talking about that. There's no shame, no embarrassment. This is such a normal part of life, part of relationships. Just know that, and it's okay.
There are people out there who can talk very maturely about sex. We're not all like middle schoolers anymore.
Right. And if you say you're having struggle in your relationship with that, it's like, oh, it's like not even a surprise to anyone who works with anyone in relationship. It's like, oh yeah. So just, you know, just like, yeah, and the sun's going to rise tomorrow. Like, this is so normal.
I think we're so used to being like teased or like shamed or like gasped of like, you can't talk about that. I think that's part of why it's hard to talk about it, even in a professional setting. But my last comment is, I want to talk about an idea I use with kids. And we haven't talked a lot about that, so I'm just shoving it here at the end. But Chris was saying like sex positive and shame free. It's fantastic. I like to think about talking to your kids, and I would even say your spouse, about sex is something that's not put in like a 1 hour conversation once a year, like where it doesn't have like those kinds of boundaries. Okay, it's that one time where we talk about it. It's the one time after a fireside, or it's the one time after a special family home meeting or whatever, where we can actually talk about it. I think that's part of what keeps shame and like not the sex positive approach, is that it's sort of this like hush hush special circumstance type thing. And what that does is, and I see this whether it's with your kids or with your spouse, where we sort of make it this like special but not special in a good way kind of thing, but just like
special, awkward
awkward, yeah, thing, instead of it's like it's always on the table. It's something we talk about very regularly and very comfortably, and that we have language that's appropriate and like clear when we do talk about it. Like, that's why I started with definitions. That's something I've tried with my kids, is to normalize words around your bodies and sex, where we say them not with like a snicker or a whisper or with discomfort, but we're like, this is just the language we use because it's accurate and appropriate. And I think creating that kind of environment around sex and talking about sex and talking about your sexuality and with kids, with your spouse, and it'll look different depending on who you're talking to, but this sort of general approach of, this is an okay topic. You don't, like, because I'm bringing it up doesn't mean I'm deviant or weird or like something's wrong that needs to be fixed. I'm talking about it because it's normal and a natural and part of life. And so we talk about it because we talk about these things that are important and normal and natural, whether it's in our family or whether it's in our marriage. Like, I think there's so much power in normalizing it.
Okay. Agreed.
Any final comments? Any last things? Are we good for this month's panel discussion? I think we're good.
I'm good.
All right.
Always a fun discussion with you ladies.
Yeah, it's getting late anyway. All right. We will see everybody next month when we meet again to talk about more things mixed faith marriage. All right. Bye, y'all.
Thanks, everyone.